ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Joe George, assistant to the regional manager behind the glass, and it is a Taco Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's foreign in here to me. I'll be honest with you. It's a little foreign inside of these walls.
Yeah.
It's good to be back, though. It's good to see your face.
Short-timer, part-timer, joining us for a quick jaunt before you jaunt on out.
Today's my Friday.
Yeah.
I may or may not have mailed in this week's shows. Mm. I'm just kidding. I would never do that. I would never do that. Coug Blaze is saying, make sure to sanitize my workspace and stay away from Jake and his tissues. I was logging off of the Twitch yesterday after our show, and like I was packing up some things, left my computer on for a second, and then as soon as I was done packing it up, I went to shut down the computer, and then I had to take Branham Baby to the minor ER, see what was wrong with him, to roll out some, what's that thing going around? RSV or RVS? I don't know. It was negative, so we're good. But that's why I wasn't in studio yesterday, because I had a 3:15 appointment right by the house. So everything's good. Everything's good on that front. But I just looked at the Twitch for a second, and Jake has he brought in his own personal box of Kleenex. Like, not even the miniature kind. Like, not the ones that you get, like, in a little bag that you can, like, the travel size.
Yeah.
Not the little cubicle one, like the little box one that you find in hotels. This dude brought in, like, the rectangular box of Kleenex. Like the family size of Kleenex to do a radio program in this very seat. I should have sanitized it. I forgot.
No, first of all,
I'm terrified.
What part of that surprises you? Exactly. Second of all,
none of it.
He has sounded congested for like 3 weeks.
I think it's the Roger stuff getting to him.
Probably right, because he doesn't sleep and he sits there and bites his nails and, you know, keeps pressing refresh
on
his.
How do you know he bites his nails? Oh,
I'm just saying,
because
he's nervous.
I got you.
But every time I'm driving home and I listen to him, I go, he's still sick? He's not talking to me anymore either, because I don't think he likes Red Weasel.
He's not talking to you?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
You know, like, he'll come in and open the door, and the door will fly open and be like, hello, and you not in here yesterday, and he's just dead silent when he opened the door, and I was like, okay, all right.
You cut the tension with a knife?
Yeah, I guess he can't take the old Red Weasel.
Man, I'm sad I missed that. I would have loved to be that. I thrive off of confrontation and awkwardness. I love it.
You love all that drama.
I really do. I would have loved to be here for that. I'm sad that I missed that. The Texans made some moves right when we went off
the
air yesterday. I don't know how to feel about this. I'm trying to come to terms. Like, I thought long and hard about this. My initial thought was that Nick Caserio has the over 5.5 Texans wins next year, and he's striving hard to make sure that this team can win 6 or 7 games. That way his over in Vegas can hit for the 2023 win total. I'll start with some positive. I'll start with some positivity for the Houston Texans and Nick Caserio. Look, Dalton Schultz is a good NFL football player.
Yep.
Devin Singletary is a real football player. I will give the Texans credit for doing this. Bringing in players that are real NFL players. For the last couple of years, whether it was with Kelly, whether it was with Lovie Smith, there's a lot of dudes who are getting a lot of snaps for the Houston Texans that are NFL backups. So I'll at the very least start with some positivity and tip my cap to Nick Caserio and the Houston Texans for acting like a real NFL team and bringing in real NFL players with some quality.
I'm with you. And when I first heard of both signings driving home, I thought, well, these are two good pickups. These are guys that, you know, can actually help fortify their position groups. I think Dalton Schultz immediately becomes the best tight end on the team, and he gives them credibility at the tight end position, which they've been striving for several years now to try and find someone, maybe since Owen Daniels, to find a really true good tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the standpoint of Singletary, I believe that he is the perfect complementary piece at 5'7", kind of shifty, that he can really complement Pierce and really complete their backfield more so than you know, the fighting Rex Burkhead. So I liked both pickups until I heard the deals. Once I heard the deals that they were both one-year deals, I'm like, well, then what are we doing? We're doing the same thing all over again.
I'm a little bit more okay with the one-year deal for Singletary than I am Schultz, because, like, running backs kind of dime a dozen. But Singletary's 25 years old.
Yeah.
Like, he's young. Dalton Schultz, who turned down a big 3-year deal with the Dallas Cowboys, like, is somebody that you would like to have in fold for a while. That's the one thing that I can't come to terms with. Like, I really don't understand. So, like, I don't want to bang on Nick Caserio and the Houston Texans all the time. I think that the additions of Dalton Schultz makes the tight end room much better. He's immediately your best tight end. And to your point, maybe the best tight end the Texans have had since Owen. I think that's fair to say. Mm-hmm. Agree completely that Devin Singletary is like, what have we been talking about all offseason when it comes to the running back room? Add a dude who's shifty, can catch the ball out of the backfield. Okay, great. Devin Singletary is that guy. So, like, I like the players that they brought in. I can't wrap my mind around what are they doing with the contracts of these two players. I don't understand for a second why you give Dalton Schultz and Devin Singletary 1 year. What are the plans? Like, what are the goals of the Houston Texans that it's a one-year deal for both of these players? It blows my mind.
Yeah, it blows my mind, too, because when you think about it, and even what they did with Jerry Hughes and Stevie Nelson, they knew that they were going to commit more than just a one-year deal. Because you know if it's a one-year deal, they're one and done. If they play better than their contract, they're going somewhere else to get more money and a bigger deal and a better opportunity to win. And so if you get them for a couple of years, especially at their age, because I think Schultz is a guy that walked away from a deal that he might regret because Dallas was offering 3 years. Mm-hmm. And that I'm surprised that he left that situation with a chance to possibly compete for the NFC with a much more polished and solid roster from top to bottom. But look, kudos to the Texans, but then why one? Unless he was the one that said, look, I'm going to do it on a prove-it deal. I'm going to play for 1 year to try and get a bigger deal than what Dallas offered me. Fair. That's fine. Then you have to respect that because if you push back, he might not want to sign here. But otherwise, because they didn't break the bank. They're very affordable contracts, too, to where at their age, for that money, if I could have got them for multiple years, I certainly would have tried everything that I could have to probably wrap that up if I could.
I just feel like if you're a rebuilding team, when you sign a player to a one-year deal, you're doing them a favor and they're not doing you a favor. Like, if the Texans aren't a playoff team next year, what is the purpose of Dalton Schultz in a one-year deal? What is the purpose of Devin Singletary on a one-year deal? The Texans had this example this season. They had Oboe, the defensive end that played pretty well. And then what did he do? He played well on a one-year contract. And it's like, oh, man, he played oh well that he priced us out of the market, that he went and signed with somebody else. And what did he provide to you? He provided some decent defensive play on a three-win team. So, like, yeah, Dalton Schultz is an upgraded tight end. Devin Singletary makes the running back room better. I just don't understand the contracts at all for the Houston Texans. Like, I don't understand what their plan is. I don't understand what their goal is. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What is the big picture here for the Houston Texans? Are they trying to tell you? And look, maybe we can be sold on this. Maybe Nick Caserio wants to give DeMeco Ryans a fighting chance next year to surprise. We're like, hey, we can try to find our way into playoff contention in the final month of the year. And it doesn't take a ton to be in playoff contention in the final month of the year because there's seven teams that make the playoffs, and a lot of times nine wins is going to get you there. So you can finish two games above, like out of the playoffs and win seven games. So perhaps that's what the Texans are saying here. Perhaps the Texans are saying, you know what? We're going to give our rookie quarterback a solid veteran running back that he can check it down to. Tight ends can be a security blanket for a rookie quarterback. So let's make sure that we have those guys in place. Maybe DeMeco is like this unbelievable head coach. He can try to win you nine games. That is the only thing that I can like even come close to saying that's the plan for Nick Caserio.
Well, but I think that if they truly are going with a quarterback in the first round, then I think that they're going to do what they were going to do with Davis Mills, but they're going to do it on steroids. They're going to, you know, they did their best to try and give Davis Mills weapons and a full complement to work with to try and have the best chance to succeed. And we had talked about that, throughout the time that they had announced that Davis Mills was going to be, you know, the starting quarterback for the year. Now you're looking at it and saying, now it's even more hyper important that we do it and we do it at a different level because this is our guy. We're hoping that this is our guy for the next 5 to 7 years. He's our franchise quarterback. Now it's not just O.J. Howard at the tight end and or, you know, find your best receiving core that you can put together, you know, with masking tape and scissors. This is, let's put together an entire offensive complement that gives this kid right from the jump a chance to succeed, and so he doesn't get his head ripped off.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably priority for this. The 1 year deal, though, is just something that you're doing the player a favor in my mind. A lot of people on the Twitch are saying, well, there's no way that Dalton Schultz is going to sign more than a 1 year deal with the Houston Texans. You're probably right.
Well,
like, I'm not going to argue that point.
Well, but if they gave him more money than Dallas, if they would have done that, which I don't see them doing.
Right. They don't want that big of a commitment.
But there was a chance, whether maybe somewhere else, where if someone would have offered more than Dallas was offering him, and the same amount of time, 3 years, he would have taken that.
See, OG says, like, yeah, but you're not going to do that. Casario hasn't been shown to spend big money in free
agency. But if they're saying there's no way Dalton Schultz signs for more than a year. Yeah, there were some. If that opportunity.
You money whip him. Yeah, I agree with that. But OG says 1 year deals are the only way to get great players will come here right now. Only way good to great players will come here right now. I don't think you can find great players in free agency. Nope. I think you can find good players in free agency. But. Like, I'm trying to think of what, like, what does next year look like for Dalton Schultz? Like, if Dalton Schultz plays well and the Texans aren't a playoff contender, what was the win there? Like, what is the gain for the Houston Texans? Is it only solely the development of a rookie quarterback? Okay, I can get around that a little bit because I'm of the mindset that, look, I don't mind the Dalton Schultz signing at all. I think he's a really good football player. Devin Singletary is a good complimentary piece to Damian Pierce. I like the quality that the Houston Texans are bringing in. I would have done everything possible to get those dudes on at least a two-year deal, not a one-year deal. The one-year deal makes absolutely no sense to me, and I understand that Dalton Schultz might not have wanted to sign a big term, like long-term contract because he wants to play on 1 year. If what I need to see, though, is if the Houston Texans are lousy next year, if the Houston Texans aren't winning football games next year, these guys need to be flipped. These guys need to be traded. These guys need to be like what the Pittsburgh Pirates do when they sign relievers and then they trade them at the deadline. Mm-hmm. Because, like, Oboe is a great story for the Houston Texans. He was able to rebound, has, like, never really been an everyday starter in the NFL. The Texans gave him that opportunity once he was healthy. He played really well. He got a big contract. What did the Texans get out of that? The Texans got nothing. They got 3 wins. They got no gain there. They got no ROI there. They got solid production on a 3-win team. Congratulations, Houston Texans. I'm cool with Schultz and Singletary. But I need to know, the caveat for me to be like completely okay with a 1 year deal is if that the Houston Texans are out of playoff contention when the trade deadline rolls around, that you need to be trading those players. You need to be trading Devin Singletary and Dalton Schultz if you're out of contention when the deadline rolls around.
But why if they're better than serviceable?
Because you stink and they're going to leave you in free agency, so get something while you can.
Well, what if they want it? What if they're interested in an extension?
Well, now you're going to be paying at the top of the market because they're going to be like good, and you're going to have to pay more money than they're probably worth.
But I don't know that you know that. You're right. If they do.
If they're bad, you're going to sign them for a lot of money?
No.
If they're good, you're going to sign them for money, which means if they're good
well,
and you're signing for money, you have to sign them for a lot.
But you know that there are guys that get into this environment and for one reason or another say, I like it here. I feel comfortable here. I like what you're building here. I'd like to be a part of it. I'll work with you. And then you make it worth my while, maybe with an extra year or, you know. So obviously extra money, but it doesn't have to break the bank per se. And you can lock up two guys that are younger that could be a part of your core that you don't have to go try and draft or find later on.
I just don't see that scenario. Like if they're playing well, they're going to sign a sweetheart hometown discount. I don't see that. Maybe I'm just naive. 713-780-ESPN.
I think you'll be okay with Schultz.
Tell us why on the other side. 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. What are the Texans' plans? What are the goals after these one-year deals with Dalton Schultz and Devin Singletary? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN at 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, the Houston Texans have signed good football players. Dalton Schultz, Devin Singletary to one-year deals, though. I'm having a tough time understanding why one-year deals when I don't think that the Texans are going to be very good next year. I'm all in favor of good players coming here. I just wish it was a longer-term contract. Joe, you think it's going to be a good thing. Why? Why are we going to be all right?
I think that's going to be all right because what's happening this year is going to happen again next year. The tight end market and free agency is not good. Like, if you look at the draft, that's why these guys, Mike Gesicki, Dalton Schultz, they're not getting the contract you want because, you know, Todd McShay says he has, like, 10 tight ends in the top 60 or 70 in this draft. So people are looking at it that way. Next year, you've got a prospect who's better than every single tight end in this draft times 5. Brock Bowers from Georgia is way better than Mayers and all these guys. Really? He's going to be a superstar, I think. I mean, he was up for the Lombardi Award this year as a junior. Like, you watch Georgia play, like, he's just an absolute monster. But then you also have Evan Engram will be off his franchise tag. Cole Kmet's going to hit free agency. TJ Hawkinson's going to hit free agency. So next year, even if Dalton Schultz has the best year, he's not going to be anywhere near the top tight end. Even Tyler Higbee's probably going to be better.
It's going to be an oversaturated market.
So it's an oversaturated market. So I think you'll be able to get Schultz back or find another piece like him on a one-year deal. So to me, I think what the NFL is telling us this offseason with these contracts is that they don't value tight ends in big contracts because they seem interchangeable. Like, there's so much talent at that position that you don't have to spend big. So I think you can get Schultz on another deal, or you can get someone else next year. It's the least worried about position for me in the NFL right now.
See, I think it's hyper important when you bring in a rookie quarterback, especially with how bad the Texans tight ends have been. But that's one of your first safety valves. And so I think it's really important you get a good pass-catching tight end. I look at him, though, and I say with all the names that you named, Joe, I really don't consider him a good blocking tight end. I don't consider him a big multi-purpose tight end. I think he's a guy that can catch the football for you. I think he's a guy that can create space and get open. But I don't think that, because the way people look at it in the NFL today, you either, Mark Andrews is the rarity where he can thump you and he can also get open. But you're either looking for a pass-catching tight end or you're looking for a blocker or you have two guys on your roster. I think he's one of those guys that's more heavily favored towards being a pass-catching tight end.
He's almost more a slot receiver.
Right, because he's not big enough really and bulky enough to sit there and block on the run and do a lot of the blocking things. That's why the Texans are probably going to have one of those big bulldozers as well as one of their tight ends.
I'm okay doing it by committee. I have no problem being tied in by committee. Like, you need more than one guy anyways. Like, we've seen many examples of a team that has a passing tight end and a blocking tight end. Same thing with a running back. Like, we see guys, right, all third down running backs. I mean, how did that come into existence? Joe, I think you talked me into it. I think you talked me into being completely okay with Dalton Schultz, knowing that the next free agency cycle in 2024 is going to be oversaturated potentially with tight ends. I think that this rookie draft class is really strong at tight end.
It's
if
really
you're telling
strong.
Me that it's better, I'll take your word
well,
for
I
it.
Well, I think the top guy.
That does make me feel
Brock
better
Bowers,
about tight ends.
Even if
Bowers
you
is better.
But even if you don't end up with one of the top three tight ends, but because you have Dalton Schultz, you get Washington from Georgia.
Awesome.
I mean, that's a perfect 1-2 punch right there.
One yeah, of the things,
develop your next guy.
One of the thoughts that I had with this, too, is that even though you've signed Schultz, it should not eliminate the Houston Texans from drafting a tight end.
Completely agree.
Now,
what
maybe
about
it does
12?
At 12. Now, it does at 12. I'll give you that. I'll concede that. I think that the Texans,
yeah,
in fact, have kind of closed. Well, has Robert Woods closed the book on receiver at 12?
No.
I don't think so either.
I said when they signed Robert Woods that defined the end of the Brandon Cooks era in Houston, because whether he's a one or not, he's going to be a one this year.
Yeah. I mean, but most people thought Cooks was gone.
I don't know. You were the one that said, depending on the price.
I said that Cooks is going to be gone, but I would keep Brandon Cooks. If all I knew was what I was getting with what the Cowboys gave me, I would have kept Brandon Cooks. But
right.
I think it was a foregone conclusion that Brandon
but
Cooks
I,
was going to
like,
be gone.
I think on the flip side of this, I mean, we're obviously looking at all the Texans angles on this, but I think from a Buffalo perspective, I think the fact that, you know, they have Dalvin Cook's little brother on the roster, but I think this maybe opens the door that they're looking at a Bijan Robinson, that they're looking for another running back, and that, again, because they have a loaded roster, that might be a move that they're going to try to make because they can upgrade the running back room. They still got another good running back, but Singletary was too small and wasn't the right fit for what they were trying to do.
Yeah. All right. Y'all have talked me into it. Y'all have talked me into being completely okay, because I like that you're getting better players. I like that Schultz is here. I like that Singletary's here. I think that they do upgrade your offense. I would prefer multi-year deals, but if you lose Schultz after a year and you get somebody who's equivalent to Schultz on a very, you know, manageable deal, okay. I think that running backs are dime or dozen. You just have to go get that running back. Jay Texas on our Twitch says, Branham can't appreciate a thing Casario does. I defend Nick Casario more than anybody. People have called me the Nick Casario defender of the show at times whenever we had Brendan. I always talk well about Casario. Whenever the 3-7 guys were banging on Nick Casario because he said there's more important things than football, I said, what an outrageous, ridiculous thing to criticize a general manager over. I've defended Nick Casario more than everybody in this city.
I mean, I defend him quite a bit too, but I also, you know, I think we both are open to being as honest as we possibly can be. We call out his shortcomings. We call out where he did things well. You know, I always hang my hat on the way he I don't want to say manipulated. He maneuvered the Watson trade. And with the draft picks that he was able to make in 1.5 draft classes to hit on as many guys as he hit. Obviously, I understand, too, that the 2 first-round picks a year ago are still going to be heavily scrutinized. But I think that he's done some things well. But I think that we've both been very fair to calling good when we see it, calling bad when we see it. And that's the way you're supposed to do it. But look, the jury's still out. The seat's getting warm. And these are the kind of things that he's going to be graded on. I like both players. I like the fact that these are names that we recognize that are in the early stages of their career that could positively could have a positive impact on this next season for the Houston Texans. I'm with you. The first thing I heard about when I heard the deals was, ooh, I don't like 1 year on those deals.
Now, this is something that I've thought about. Spencer texted in 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Spencer says, listening to Lance this morning, he said the one-year deals play a part in getting compensation picks. They do well and Texans don't sign. They don't spend. They get picks. Like, if depending on the type of contract that they sign, they can get compensation for those players if they leave in free agency. That is something that I've thought about. Now, I might underrate that and overrate flipping them at the trade deadline, but I'm a huge fan. If the Texans are going to have money to spend, I think that every team that's in a salary cap sport should be going up to that salary cap. And even if you don't think you're going to contend, I think you should go up to that salary cap with the idea of flipping those players. Now, I probably overrate trading those players at the deadline, and I probably underrate losing them in free agency and getting the compensation back. It's kind of the same principle, though. It's the same thing that you're spending money on a player that you don't think is going to be here long term, but you think could give you back a draft pick. Because at last segment, I said, if you're out of playoff contention, you should be trading all your one-year deals that have any sort of value. You should be looking at trading Dalton Schultz if you're out of contention when the trade deadline comes up. You should be looking at trading Devin Singletary for something of value when the trade deadline comes up if you're out of contention for the playoffs. I believe that, but I'm a huge fan of using the money that you have under their salary cap, thinking big picture as a way to use that money to basically buy draft picks in a de facto way.
See, I look at the Singletary pickup, and I say, if you use him how I believe you're going to use him as a complimentary back, then I don't think he's going to do too much to impress too many people to, one, have a high demand before the deadline, no matter where you sit, but also for, two, if he does his job accordingly and he wants to stay in the league and he realizes he's not a bell cow type running back with the way teams look at him, that you could keep him. You could get him at the end of the year or, you know, negotiate towards the end of the year and say, before he even hits free agency, we're going to give you 2 or 3 more years at a similar salary and lock him up. And I think it helps both sides, because I don't think at his size he is the kind of guy that's going to get a big contract or get, you know, grossly overpaid by a team, because I don't think he's going to have that big of a role. But the role that he could play for this team with this quarterback, I think they could hang on to him, and I think they could lock him up at a very reasonable price.
Yeah, but I'm a big fan that even if you don't, you're using money to try to think big picture of, okay, well, how can I use this money to basically buy draft picks? Like, if it's Dalton Schultz is looking good, right, and you're out of contention when the trade deadline comes up, okay, trade him for a mid-round draft pick. That's great. You spent $7 million to buy a 4th or 5th round pick, and you're just using cap space to do that. I think that that's wise. Or to Lance's point, what Spencer, you know, relayed to us through the text line, which sometimes I underrate and I overrate trading players at the deadline, yeah, just let them leave in free agency and get compensation back that way, which is a draft pick. I think that's really shrewd. I really do.
What's more valuable to you, though, getting an extra draft pick or having Dalton Schultz for a couple more years?
But they don't have him for a couple more years.
I mean, if you had the opportunity. You have the opportunity, as you consider things, you have the opportunity to lock him up for a couple more years and have him be a part of this rebuild.
I need to see what he looks like, to be honest. Like, and that's the benefit of having him for 17 games, I suppose. But if he looks, see, it can go either way. Like, if he looks bad, he's leaving and you're getting no compensation. Or he can look really good. Joe painted the oversaturated tight end market and now I'm overpaying. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's going to be a lot of new information.
Yeah, no, look, I think that it was a risk worth taking. I think that it was an upgrade on the roster at both positions immediately. And I think that there's the potential there to keep one or both of these guys around. And I think you could get them at a decent price. You're right. If Schultz overplays his contract, well, then you got a decision to make, because you could have a guy that you could rely on for the next, you know, 3-4 years, but you're going to have to pay him. And at what price? Or you can say, thanks for the memories. Go get what you wanted all along, which is a multi-year big-time deal.
And get compensation.
Yeah,
and get compensation.
I mean, if you can, sure.
No, you can get compensation for a player leaving in free agency. That's what Lance's point was, which is smart because now you're using money on basically a draft pick. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line. You can do either way. 713-780-3776. One-year deals for Schultz, Singletary. Wise, dumb, what's their plan? What's their goal for this season? Also, a little Astros conversation. Altuve, McCullers, maybe even Brantley and Yordan on the IL to start the season. We'll see about that. Where do you realistically think the Astros will be in the standings when Jose Altuve returns? We should do a guess the date on when Altuve returns as well. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Why would Schultz even take a one-year deal? I wonder if there's something we don't know, 8924. Because he wants to play really well and get a big contract. I mean, it's like you mentioned earlier, it's a one-year prove-it deal. He turned down a big contract with Dallas. The market isn't going to pay him very much. Look at the tight end market. Look what's getting what. It's not a very, like Joe mentioned earlier, it's not a position that is currently getting a lot of money.
I think Joe makes a great point, though. The market, which sometimes the agents don't really look into it. I go back to the Keuchel situation with Boris. They just had a number and a term in mind, and they weren't going to take anything less than that. And then they walked, and they found out that when they pushed away from the table and said that the deal wasn't something that they could accept from the Astros, they found out in the long run and in the short term that he wasn't worth what he thought he was. And I think that when you have a more one-dimensional tight end, as opposed to some of the guys that are going to hit the market that can do it all fairly well and do one thing really well, you're probably going to see your stock drop, and you're not being realistic with yourself or as an agent with your player that you're really not as valuable as you think you are.
Yep. 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. What is the Texans' plan? What are they showing you with these additions of two quality offensive players to a one-year deal? 7584, I think there's two goals with these one-year deals. One, give your new QB some weapons. That's one that I'm cool with. Like, that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you're going rookie quarterback in the first round, we all expect the Texans to do that. Yeah, give them some weapons. I'm totally all right with that. The one-year deal is where I'm kind of like, I wish it was two.
Yeah, we're on the same page because I hated it when I heard the one-year deal. But if this isn't Davis Mills now. This isn't, you know, prove it and see what you got and see if you got anything worth building around. This is, you're going to have your guy. And you're thinking this is going to be your guy until he's not. But, you know, the plan is multiple years with this guy. So put the best weapons you can around him within reason. Don't overspend. Don't overextend for too long. But find guys that upgrade the positions that they play so that your quarterback has the best chance to succeed. And I think that's what they're starting to do here before you even know which quarterback they're going to take.
There's his second point, the other goal, is making this team watchable for the first time in 3 years. Here is my stance on that. If a team is selecting players, signing free agents, whatever, with the idea of the fan base, then that team is a loser franchise. The goal for every team, and look, some owners are like this, we understand, but they don't care about winning. If your organization cares about winning, the only thing that should matter is that every move you are making is with the idea of winning football games, whether you have a short-term plan or you have a long-term plan. If you start making decisions based on making a team watchable, then your priority is not winning football games. Your priority is entertaining the fans, and that scares me. I do not want that from an organization. Secondly, the best way to make your team watchable is to win games. The Astros did pretty good last year, right? Minute Maid Park at the gate. Attendance numbers were still very high. Ratings still very high for the Houston Astros. Astros are gold right now. They're going to be wearing gold jerseys because they won the World Series. Gold numbers, at least. The Astros, over the years, have let go Dallas Keuchel, George Springer, Carlos Correa, Gerrit Cole, Justin Verlander, and no one is batting an eye. They might have upset some people right when it happened, but people are still going to the games. Why? Because they're winning. If your goal is to get people in the seats, the first goal and the only goal should be winning games, and that's how you get people in the seats. That's the best marketing tool that exists.
The biggest problems you have in sports today are when ownership and marketing overstep their bounds. Ownership and marketing can dabble in uniform changes, color schemes, marketing plans, posters and billboards, ticket promotions, giveaways. Those are the kind of things where they can make a difference. But stay out of the football operations. Stay out of the basketball operations, whichever team it is, the baseball operations. Let the smartest baseball, basketball, and football people in the room handle their rosters, because they don't give a rat's ass about who's on a billboard, which bobblehead is being given away, and what's, you know, what's the next way to make an extra dollar or two. They're talking about sustained winning. Mm-hmm. They're talking about once they get over the pothole they're trying to get over, and in this case, the Grand Canyon that Bill O'Brien left that they're still trying to clean up the mess from. But once they start getting the train going in the right direction, they want that steam engine clicking on all cylinders, and they want it go time for a long period of time. That's why you do what you do and don't care what the media and the fans think, within reason. Obviously, there's a controversial player. Now both sides have to come together. But if it's just with the draft and free agency and things like that, the only people you're trying to appease are your coaching staff and those that are most focused on winning. And that's
like
it.
I feel like the coaching staff is often where, like, organizations get it wrong in terms of appeasing your fan base. Like, D'Amico isn't appeasing the fan base higher in a way. Like, and if he was hired for that intention, it's most likely going to blow up in your face. Because when you have to fire these legends, it just hurts. And I guess I would call D'Amico a legend. Like,
That's fair to call him a Texans legend.
Yeah. If you have to fire these guys, it's just a disaster. Look at Georgetown right now. You got to fire Patrick Ewing. St. John's had to fire Chris Mullins. You know, John Elway had to be booted out of the Denver Broncos organization.
Houston had to fire Clyde Drexler.
Like, exactly. Like, when you hire these guys to appease a fan base and then it falls apart, it hurts you more in the long term, because now you've taken, like, this figure that mattered as a player,
and usually you wait a year or two too long.
Oh yeah,
like Ewing's a good example. They waited a year or two too long.
He didn't win
Ewing.
A conference game last year.
Yeah,
I mean, you look at the Colts even with Jeff Saturday.
Yes,
it was supposed to be an interim fix. No one was supposed to get their hopes up or get too sold on him, and then suddenly everybody had they were caught in their feelings because Jeff Saturday wasn't going to get the full time gig, and it wasn't going very well. And it's a very slippery slope. I think that on the flip side, Joe, you go get the best coach available. If he has some marketing cachet on top of it,
huge bonus.
It's a big bonus for you, but don't play it in reverse. Don't play it with the marketing angle first, because I think, to your point, Jeremy, on Clyde, they knew what he was going to do from a marketing perspective. That was going to be everybody paying attention, national TV for his opening game, everybody looking at U of H, and from a ticket and a sponsorship capability, that name was going to bring in some extra kick in the short term.
It was a splash.
Right. But once that splash is over, where's the substance? And that was something that they had a hard time dealing with.
Yeah. I think D'Amico was the right coach for the Texans.
Absolutely.
Though.
Like,
agreed.
That fear does exist in my mind. Like, it is there. It's not a very popular thing to say, certainly.
That they hired him just to appease the fan base?
Right, and I don't think that they did. I don't think they hired D'Amico only to appease the fan base. I really think, in D'Amico's point, that it was an additional bonus. I think they hired D'Amico because D'Amico is who they felt was the best coach on the market. D'Amico was high on my list. I preferred Benny Johnson, but as soon as Benny Johnson took his name out of consideration for all of the openings, like, D'Amico was fine. Like, I was cool with D'Amico. I think D'Amico is going to be a good coach in the NFL. Now, if this was, like, if it was J.J. Watt, then I would be terrified. Like, it's like, okay, now this is only to appease the fan base, whereas D'Amico at least is a qualified candidate, and he was, like, one of the top names on the market.
Yeah, like, the one thing the Texans that's gone very well for them, from my view, this offseason, is that we've yet to hear the rumors like we're hearing in Carolina that ownership wants a certain quarterback, and that there might be a battle between ownership and management and coaching about which quarterback gets taken number one overall. And that could be happening behind the scenes for the Texans, but at this moment in time, we're not hearing rumors. There's been none of it that Cal McNair wants Bryce Young over, or wants an Anthony Richardson over Bryce Young. Long as that doesn't happen, like, that's a
but
huge
what if he,
positive.
What if he told him you need quarterback, though? Does that bother you?
No.
Most people would say no because they want quarterback. But what if Nick Caserio's hell-bent that Will Anderson's the best player and everybody else around him, especially in ownership, is like, no, we need a quarterback? That's concerning.
It is, yeah.
But when I look at it, that's what the point I was making too on ownership is, you don't want Daniel Snyder interrupting at the last minute and saying, as much as your football operations are hell-bent to your point on a different player, Daniel Snyder came in and wanted the QB from Ohio State. And it just completely backfired. and he overruled everybody in the room. You don't want the owners meddling too much. Jerry Jones as a general manager, I still think is a massive problem for the Cowboys. I think it's held them back more than it's made them better. And I think they've made some bad moves, bad trades, and that they're better served by a guy that's a full-time general manager, but he won't let it happen. And you go up and down the list, Irsay already dropping hints about, you know, that Alabama quarterback when he was looking at Bryce Young. You know, stay in your lane. Stay in to the ownership on the marketing and the overall bottom line, but stay out of the football rooms. You can sit and listen and observe like Les Alexander used to do, and if it's a money-related issue, now you got to go to him. But don't sit there and overrule people that you are paying to be the smartest people in the room on football, and then at the last minute go, yeah, but what you want and what I want are different.
This goes back to whenever Cal McNair said, though, he was going to be more involved in the coaching search, where everybody's celebrating, yay, Cal's going to be more involved. You want Cal McNair to be more involved in critical football decisions? Why?
No, the only thing I would say is I just would like to know that he knew when they were trading DeAndre Hopkins, to know that he knew what they were getting for DeAndre Hopkins, and at least understand that it wasn't really the best business move you could make from a transactional standpoint of David Johnson and a second and not even getting a first-round pick.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's get to the Astros conversation. What will the Astros, what will their record look like? Where will they be in the standings, rather, when Jose Altuve does eventually return? And I guess the date of when Jose Altuve might return. Skiller Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Jose Altuve's on the mend. He broke his thumb, the old Branham injury. I played through mine. Altuve's going to be out 8 to 10 weeks.
Too?
No. Okay. He had to have surgery to repair a broken bone. That's not soft.
Okay.
McCullers is not pitching all of spring training because he has what he's not even calling a strain to his right elbow. Yordan Alvarez hasn't appeared in a spring training game because of hand injuries that don't require any sort of treatment other than rest.
That's extremely
like,
concerning.
Let's be honest with what it is. What is Yordan's hand injury? Because it's sore every now and then. It doesn't require surgery. What kind of treatment's he getting? Well, nothing that's surgical. Well, they need him to rest. Every time they talk about it, he just needs to rest up. Okay? What does that mean? It means he's got a little bit of a boo-boo.
He's playing Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Just, he's probably going to land on the IL twice.
Yeah, I mean, how long is this going to keep happening?
Forever.
I mean, at a certain point.
I think the answer's forever.
The answer's forever.
I don't know. Obviously, I'm not in the medical profession, but I got to believe that there is some surgical procedure or something that could be done to eliminate having to keep going through all this.
It's a dude that can handle dealing with a little bit of soreness. Like, you work out, right? Yeah. Is there ever a certain body part that gets sore more than others?
Sure.
Which one?
I mean, calf.
Okay, there you go. You got calf. Do you need surgery on your calf?
No.
No, it's just an area that bothers you. That's
but
the
it
same
depends
thing with
on the area, doesn't it? I mean, if you're like, dealing with, like, a joint.
But it's
or,
not the same. Joel's walking up a treadmill at, like, what, 8 miles an hour?
Yordan's swinging a bat.
He hits 500 like feet.
Sure, but let's not act like that's like going over the middle with Bart Scott waiting to hit you in the head.
He has an exit velocity normally well above 90.
Okay. I don't understand your point, though.
If your hands
like, he
are
hits
hurting,
the ball hard. That's
yeah,
great.
And your hands are hurting.
Is he the only person? Is he the only baseball player in Major League Baseball that hits the ball hard?
No,
does
saying,
every dude that has an average exit velocity
hands,
of
Joe.
90 have hurt hands?
He's had injuries to both hands.
It's bizarre. Like, I think it's a dude that has bad hands. Like, we have bad certain part. I have a bad back. I'm certainly not a professional athlete. You have a bad calf. Sometimes you can deal with a bad calf. Sometimes I can deal with a bad back. Yordan can't deal with bad hands. Lance McCullers, if somebody breathes on his right elbow wrong, he's going to not pitch for a month. Like, that's who they are. That's who Lance McCullers is. That's who Yordan Alvarez is. Is there anything that tells you otherwise? Like, Yordan's been like this his entire career as an Astro. Lance McCullers has been like this his entire career as an Astro. That's who they are.
I'm just very inquisitive as to, is there a medical solution for whatever the diagnosis is?
Because they would have obviously, done it, right?
Well, no, not necessarily, because the player has to be on board with it, too. And if you have option A, which is rest, and option B, which is some procedure to take care of it, and he doesn't want to consider the option B, then I guess you have to respect his wishes because you just signed him to a very big deal for a lot of years and you want him to be happy. But at a certain point, the team probably has to draw a line in the sand and go, look, man, we can't keep dealing with this over and over again, and it's killing us. So, you know, we're going to have to ask you to consider the surgery or whatever the procedure.
I'm of the belief, in my opinion, that if there was a surgery option that would fix all of this going forward, it would have been done a week after the Astros won the World Series. My opinion.
I'm of the belief it should have been, but I was of the belief that something should have been done with McCullers over a year ago when the White Sox series was the last we saw of him in the playoffs.
Right, but if you don't need surgery, you don't have surgery. If there's nothing to surgically repair, you can't surgically repair it. Like, McCullers had a strain to the UCL. There wasn't a tear there.
Jordan but if there Alvarez was a way to strengthen it, if there was a procedure to do to try and eliminate this from lingering on or to speed up the recovery process.
I don't know if that exists.
I don't either. That's why, but I'm saying if there was.
But I'm of the belief, though, that if that was like a possibility, the Astros would have went down that route. I mean, Jordan's been injury prone his entire Astros career.
I just don't know how that works with Lance. Can you force a player to do that if it's something that they don't want to do either?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's you have to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Todd, the show said Espada just said that he should be on the field in the next day or two. He hit BP today. I'm assuming he's talking about Jordan Alvarez. Yeah. That's great. Hopefully his hands are sore tomorrow.
Dusty said he's going to play on Thursday and optimistic about opening day.
I think Jordan just picks and chooses certain times where he doesn't want to play.
Well, I mean, what's the difference? Like, if this is the reality that we're in now, he's no different than a franchise quarterback in the NFL that doesn't want to show up to training camp. If Jordan Alvarez doesn't want to participate in spring training, don't feed us this hand stuff. Just say you don't want to practice and you don't want to play in spring training. Like, if that's really the case, cool.
I'm good with that. I'm good with all of that. Jordan Alvarez is your best offensive player. He's top three offensive player in all of baseball. Totally fine with that. But if that is your mindset, dude should never play left field. Ever. He should only be a DH.
See, that's just the other part of the equation. We're just worried about his hands and getting him back on the field and being a hitter, but then we kind of forget in the meantime that Bagwell said 50% of the time he wants him in left field. You know what this team isn't when he's not in it, in the lineup.
Thankfully, that guy's not making the decisions.
Right, and you don't know. I mean, yeah, Dana Brown is in the position, but you don't know how much influence he still has because you know how much he's loved by the owner.
I think he has a lot of influence.
I do, too.
I think he has a lot of
influence.
And so,
therefore, I think that, you know, cooler heads better prevail and just figure it out. If he is in the lineup opening day and he's available, just leave him at DH. Yeah. Don't screw with it and play with fire too much.
They're not gonna, but you're right that they should.
Right.
I bet you Bagwell is part of the interview process. Like, if Bagwell is one of the dudes that Dana Brown is interviewing with, Jeff Bagwell has a lot of power. He was basically one of your hiring managers.
I think so, too. He's one of your hiring managers, as you said, but I don't think he's now at this point controlling. We want Jordan 50% in left field.
I think he has a voice in the room. Absolutely.
I completely agree with that.
You think Dusty Baker is listening to Jeff Bagwell?
Absolutely.
About how much Jordan Alvarez should be in left field?
Absolutely.
I don't know if he's going to listen and then like heed his advice, but he certainly, I mean, Jeff Bagwell and Dusty Baker were sitting on buckets next to each other the other day in a spring training game.
Absolutely. James Click and Dusty Baker were laughing and standing next to each other in the batting cage 5 feet from me the day before Click got fired.
But Joe, before Dana Brown was hired, think about everything that was done and think about how Crane and everybody else echoed that the brain trust making moves and considering moves was Jeff Bagwell, Reggie Jackson, Jim Crane, and whoever the number cruncher guy is.
And Dusty Baker was the one that said when he was asked after McCullers got hurt about adding depth to the starting pitching role, he said that he wished they would have added more, but they didn't have a real GM.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I think Baggy has a voice. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's determining how much Jordan Alvarez plays in left field.
I would agree with that, but he definitely has a voice, sure. And I think has some influence over Dusty.
But remember, though, too, when Bagwell made the comment, it wasn't just coming from Bagwell. It was coming from we.
Yeah.
So that would mean that there's more than just Bagwell that are in the consensus that they want him out there 50% of the time.
Yep. And it was Bagwell who said they want to be less analytical.
Yeah.
And they hired a guy.
Who was the analytics guy that name escaped? Farkas?
Farkas. Yeah, he was a Luno guy.
Yeah.
I've been reading a lot about Bobby Farkas. In that book that I printed out. What's it called again? Winning Fixes Everything.
Oh, is he featured in that book a lot?
They just signed
in the Ellen Drellick book?
Yeah, he is. Bobby Farkas is.
In a way of he was part of the sign stealing?
No, not really. It was more of him being a guy that Luno brought in as part of the brain trust, all analytics, got rid of a bunch of old dudes.
Sure.
Farkas was like, they brought him in as like a sports medicine, sports science kind of guy.
Like he's part of the Luno system.
with zero information about like athletic training and things like that. Like he was talking to trainers about how to handle things when the trainers were like, dude, you have no idea what this landscape is like. Yeah, they just signed Carlos Beltran though, and everything fixes, or winning fixes everything. Really, really good read. 1509, didn't we say Yordan should not play left field? Got to protect him from himself, but Baggy wanted him 80% of the time. Nope, not happening. I agree. Yordan's going to play a lot of left field. I agree. I don't want him to. But yes, Dusty and the Houston Astros are going to play Yordan Alvarez a lot in left field. I can already see the end of the story. I can already see it. He's going to do something and hurt himself and land on the IL. And we're all going to be like, oh my goodness, this Astro lineup does not look the same without Yordan Alvarez. Why shouldn't play left field? Dude is one of the best hitters in baseball. Protect him from himself. When do we think Jose Altuve comes back? 8 to 10 weeks with this broken thumb. When does the best second baseman in baseball come back?
June 1.
Okay. I'm cool with that. I'm of the idea that I want to do the ramp-up period right. I want to make sure that like the bone's going to heal. He's going to be 100%. Like they're not going to let him play before he's not 100%. My concern is that Jose Altuve plays before the ramp-up period is like to its conclusion.
It sounds like when they, you know, on first quotes, when they talked to him yesterday, that he said he was going to be with the team, be around the team every day, and do whatever he can to get back out on the field as quickly as possible. And I don't think that's the right approach.
I like him being with the team, but I don't
do
want
too,
him to
but
be.
I'm saying, but if he's not 100%.
Well, he's not. They're not going to, like,
100%. If it's lingering, I don't want him back out there.
They're not going to let him back before the injury is 100%. But I think the ramp-up period is where they could speed it up, which is, I don't want them to speed up the ramp-up period.
Because the ramp-up period could also slow him down. Because right. If he ramps it up and he has, you know, a setback, like we've seen with so many guys over the years with injuries, that suddenly now you're talking about even a more elongated time he's out of the lineup. And you don't know. That's been my biggest concern all season is this is a new season. Teams are better. You're not going to have that runaway, you know, big-ass lead that you had for the most of last season. I hope you do. I just am not anticipating it. So my thing now is I just hope that they hang right in there until they get healthy and get all these guys back, because I am a little worried about the landscape in the American League.
Let's operate. Go ahead.
I'm cool with a good ramp-up because you can listen to Jose Altuve in a Space Cowboys uniform on ESPN 92.5.
With Gerald Sanchez on the call.
Yep. Nice promo.
713-780-ESPN. Let's operate with that. Let's operate that Jose Altuve is back on June 1st. He's back for the summer months. June 1st, Jose Altuve, that is his return. Where do we think the Astros are going to be in the standings? Look, Lance McCullers isn't going to start with the team. We don't think that Brantley's going to start with the team. Hopefully, Yordan Alvarez doesn't sleep on his hand wrong, and he can start with the Astros on opening day. What are the Astros? Where are they in the standings on June 1st? 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.